When the novel The Glass Room by the British writer Simon Moore was published in 2009, it was an instant hit, and it was no surprise when it was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. The book was widely discussed here in the Czech Republic, as it revolves around the story of one of this country's most remarkable 20th century buildings. That's the Villa Tugendhat in Brno. However, it wasn't Simon Moore's first novel set in the city. Over a decade earlier, he wrote Mendel's Dwarf, which took its inspiration from Gregor Mendel, one of the fathers of genetics and the abbot of a Brno monastery in the 19th century. Now, Simon Moore has done it again. His latest book is called Prague Spring, and this time the setting isn't Brno but the capital, in the days just before and after the Soviet-led invasion of August 1968. The writer has just been in Prague to launch the book's Czech translation, and David Vaughan took the opportunity to speak to him. Their conversation begins with a short extract from the book.
Next morning, they venture out into the city, with an agreement to meet Lenka for coffee at the Kavarna Slavia. "It is where all writers get together," she explained when they made the arrangement. "Everyone argues. It will be interesting." So James and Ellie wander the streets of Nové Město, the new town, finding them drab and dusty. The few shops have plain windows and sparsely packed shelves. The buildings, 19th century most of them, appear tarnished and battered, like pieces of forgotten family silver found behind a locked door. Advertisements seem half-hearted, as though there's little point in making much impact because no one's really buying. Trams packed with people clang and grind along the wider roads. In Wenceslas Square, there's some kind of public meeting. A speaker harangues a small crowd. Flags fly. Perhaps it's a celebration of some kind, but it's impossible to tell. As they walk away, a man darts out of a side street and tries to sell them something. James assumes it's sex of some kind. Ellie imagines stolen goods. But it's just money he wants to sell. Czech crowns for hard currency. "Good rates," he says, presumably the only English he knows.
And this is Prague in the summer of 1968. James and Ellie are two very young English students who've just hitchhiked their way to Prague. There's a parallel story of a young British diplomat, Sam, and his Czech girlfriend, Lenka. What gave you the idea of this constellation of characters?
The James and Ellie part, the students, came from my own personal experience, 1968. I was a student in the summer of 1968, hitchhiking across Europe. Sam, I think, came from, obviously, my mind and my imagination, but I think I wanted to balance James and Ellie, who are the naive, with somebody who has more of an insight into what's going on within the country. They're both outsiders, but outsiders of a rather different sort.
You're telling the story from the point of view primarily of people from Britain who've found themselves in Prague. There is this sense of chance you use on several occasions, the metaphor, or not the metaphor, but you literally have them at one point tossing a coin to decide where to go. You have a feeling throughout this book that these are people who've had history imposed upon them completely without any choice and without having the faintest idea what to do.
I suppose it seemed to me at the time of writing just a sort of dramatic device, but it's a sort of counterpoint to the fact that it's anything but chance what is actually happening in and around Czechoslovakia and the build-up of the Warsaw Pact forces within the country and around the country, and the ultimate decision to move in is the sort of the opposite of chance.
Yes, I mean, you have that throughout the book, this menacing sense of the troops building up on the borders, which is a great advantage of the fact that you set the book partly at the British Embassy, because they were getting intelligence that this was happening, that an invasion might well be about to happen, although nobody actually knew.
No, I mean, there was the tremendous hope, and it's a hope that was dashed. I had to, of course, attempt to write it, as it was at the time, when people didn't know, but as you say, the diplomats possibly had a better insight into the possibilities than the ordinary people.
And a couple of times in the narration, you move out of the time. And, for example, there's a point where Sam and Ellie cross the border, the Czechoslovak border, and you have a description of the border today, how open it is, that there is no border, there's just a motorway with a little sign. And it happens on a couple of other occasions that you comment back. So there is a sense of distance, isn't there, from time to time?
Yes, sort of deliberate and almost irresistible. I mean, that border is actually fascinating. Driving through Germany a couple of years ago, I diverted in order to see the old border. And it's there, it's a relic.
It's rather ironic, isn't it, at a time when there's so much talk in Europe of borders and of re-establishing borders, both with Brexit and also with the refugee crisis. It's particularly ironic, isn't it, when you see the miracle of the Czechoslovak border having opened after all these things had happened.
Absolutely. Not just the Czechoslovak, but the entire Iron Curtain, the way that came down. And goodness, the idea of reverting towards anything resembling that state is awful, actually.
And this is your third novel set in what's now the Czech Republic. Each of the novels has been set in a different time and has a completely different subject. What is the fascination for you?
People keep asking me this question. I keep failing to answer it. There are all sorts of things that are attractive and interesting about what was Czechoslovakia, but is now, as you say, the Czech Republic and Slovakia indeed. Whether that is what explains my interest, my continuing interest, I'm not really sure. There's nothing else. There's no family connection or anything.
Is it perhaps that it's a country that you by now know quite well, but you're also able to look at it from outside, which for a writer can be a big advantage?
That is true. I mean, now I've known the Czech Republic for 25 years. Which is a quarter of a century, which makes it seem rather longer. But as you say, I've dipped into it, and I'm obviously an outsider, particularly, which is a frustrating point, linguistically. I live in Italy, and I'm an outsider in Italy, despite having lived there for 40 years. I go back to England now quite regularly and actually have a house there, and I'm an outsider there, and I think novelists are often natural outsiders.
All three of your books set in this country show evidence of a great depth of research and knowledge. Do you find it hard working with your research, with the facts that you manage to collect, and then writing a fictional story around them? Do you find that there's a conflict or a sense of, should I be doing this? Have I got it right?
One obviously has to get it as right as possible. There's also a great danger of becoming didactic, but I do feel about, in this book particularly, there are certain things that the British reader probably doesn't know and ought to know. I mean, Milada Horáková, for example.
That's an interesting digression in the novel, which obviously, again, you couldn't resist, because her story is the story of somebody who is so unambiguously a hero, as you put it in the book.
Absolutely. She is not well known in Britain. I suspect not well known outside the Czech lands. And she seems to me to be clearly one of the great people of the 20th century. She deserves exposure. She deserves to be known about.
And for the sake of our listeners who don't know about her, could you, in a couple of sentences, tell us a little more of her story?
She was a person who was on the wrong side of two awful systems. She was a natural democrat. She was a woman who believed in free speech and liberal values. She was on the wrong side of the Nazis when Czechoslovakia was occupied. And she was actually sentenced to death by the Nazis. It was commuted to life imprisonment. And then she was actually liberated at the end of the war. Came back home to Prague. And within a couple of years, she was on the wrong side of the communists. And she was subject to the famous show trial. And Milada Horáková was sentenced to death. And she actually refused to confess in public in the trial. She spoke the truth. She was the only one of the group who actually refused to give in to the prepared confessions. And she paid the price.
Around two-thirds of the book is set in the summer of 68, with all the implications of 1968. And there was very much, in Czechoslovakia, there was the same euphoria and the sense of change that there was in Paris and in Western cities. And then suddenly you have the invasion, and the story speeds up enormously. Mm. And interestingly, from my point of view as someone from Czech radio, is part of the drama is actually set right outside the Czech radio building, or what was then the Czechoslovak radio building.
Yes, and that was when an awful lot of the invasion came out to the West because of the broadcasting that was going on. It was being followed on Western media because of the broadcasting that was going on within the Czech radio building, and then subsequently people moving through the city broadcasting constantly, and this was all being relayed to the West. So it was very vivid in the minds of people in the West. It was enacted on the media. Nowadays, it would be even more extraordinary because of social media, but even then, I mean, there was the television broadcasting was going on from shifting studios.
And there were even, as you point out, Western pop stars here and rock groups, and one of them being the Moody Blues, who actually come into the story, don't they?
Yeah, I couldn't resist that, and you can actually find the film of them. They actually performed in the afternoon of the day before the invasion. The invasion was during the night, and they were performing Nights in White Satin, amongst others, on the Charles Bridge.
There's always been something of the absurd in Czech history, and that's a classic example, isn't it?
Indeed, absolutely.
We're doing this interview in the Václav Havel Library, and you're here for the launch of the Czech translation of the novel. You mentioned that part of your aim in writing it was slightly didactic. You're a school teacher as well by profession, to inform people in the English-speaking world more of what happened in Czechoslovakia and what the implications of that were. So with the Czech translation, obviously Czechs are far more familiar with what was happening here in 1968 than an English-speaking reader will. So are you slightly nervous as to how Czech readers will respond?
Yes, certainly. One's trespassing on recent memory. I was very aware of the fact that I had to get everything right. I think I have. I hope I have.
And do you think that you've got the Czech Republic out of your system now, or do you have a sneaking suspicion that it might creep back into another of your books?
I can't see any way that it might, but I probably said that after The Glass Room. It's a country which I'm very fond of, visit frequently, and who knows, possibly there might be something else.
Simon Moore, thank you very much indeed for talking to me.
Thank you very much.